My name is Erwin Kotler. I was a student, colleague, friend, but I guess, to put it best, I was profoundly influenced and profoundly affected, not only intellectually, but deeply psychologically, maybe in Max's words, spiritually, by Irving Layton. And as Max put it, I'm here with everyone else to remember and to celebrate a great teacher, a poet, a literati, a wordsmith, what I used to feel was really an architect of language. Indeed, a poetic genius with an abiding Jeremiad against injustice. Indeed, given Irving's intense biblical images evoked in some of the slides, as you might have seen, his powerful, resonant voice, his railing against injustice. I remember feeling, as someone who was studying Jeremiah at the time, that Jeremiah, the prophet, must have looked and sounded like Irving Layton. I was, like Moses Naimer and others at Herzliya High School, a student of Irving Layton. But to say I was a student was an understatement. For Irving Layton did not only teach me one course, literature, or a set of courses in the humanities, but he taught in the entire secular studies program at Herzliya High School, which included physics, chemistry, and math. The result is that while I learned a great deal about literature and the humanities, I learned nothing about physics and chemistry and math, during which time Irving Layton, while we were supposed to be studying physics and chemistry and math, we were learning about Shelley and Wordsworth and Shakespeare and Plato and Nietzsche, with the appropriate criticisms in that regard. Or Irving would read from his own works in progress, particularly during the class that was designed for math, such as Red Carpet in the Sun. And reading in that resonant voice, that unique blend of intellect and mind and heart and spirit and passion. Here with an excerpt as alive and as resonant today as when Irving wrote those words, and he wrote the words which was to become Red Carpet in the Sun while we were his students. And we were very, as you can imagine, very much affected by it. And these words, they dance best who dance with desire, who lifting feet of fire from fire weave before they lie down a red carpet in the sun. And he was a great teacher, challenging, provocative, evocative, passionate, audacious, inspiring, with a unique and compelling command of words, of language, in a way that even at the time when words had meaning, greater meaning than they do today, Irving had a special place in that command of language, both in his pedagogy as well as in his poetry. Irving Layton seemed to internalize in his psyche, as well as in his poetry, the romanticism of Shelley, the pantheism of Wordsworth, the dialectics of Hegel, and you heard even in the opening words this evening that kind of dialectics with respect to love and hatred and the like, the questioning of Socrates, indeed questioning whatever was the zeitgeist of the day, railing against whatever was the political correctness of the day that would seem to try to pass for conventional wisdom. And yes, with a sometimes sexual imagery, a maddening metaphor that might have caused Shelley to blush or Wordsworth to disclaim or the prophets to ask, where was God in all this? Yet Irving, who taught us in the mid-50s, in the shadow of the Holocaust and in the aftermath of the birth of the State of Israel, Irving was always alive to what I would call the vulnerability of the powerless and the powerlessness of the vulnerable, and sought to give voice to the powerless and to the voiceless. A voice that was, in its own way, profoundly Jewish, not religious in the conventional sense, but unwaveringly universalistic in its message and in its spirituality, and who would put himself on the line with his poetry and in his message. And so it was that Irving Layton became my teacher, my mentor, my inspiration, became also my colleague and my friend. And our lives began to intersect at neuralgic points of our respective being and becoming. We both, for example, began teaching at York University in the same year in 1970. We both left York and returned to Montreal, I would say, as much for reasons of aesthetics as well as anthropology, as captured in Irving's poetry. We joined hands early and often in the struggle for Soviet Jewry, particularly with Irving being at the forefront of the voices for then Soviet prisoner of conscience, Anatoly Sharansky. And we would meet, not necessarily by design, but often by inclination and intuition at such haunts and meeting grounds, and it could have been the Brown Derby delicatessen or Feldman's newsstand on Peel in St. Catherine and the like. And speaking on the occasion of Irving's 85th birthday at the Centaur Theater, I felt particularly moved because of what I said when I began this evening of the extraordinary impact that he had on my life. When Irving said that evening publicly what he had said privately to me on a number of occasions, which I repeat with some admitted conceit, but nonetheless moved by it, that he saw me as his spiritual son. Irving, as we know, developed Alzheimer's in his later years. And perhaps my most moving encounter with him was when, in visiting him at Maimonides Hospital, and when we were together, and I never knew when he did recognize me or not, that this was a period when he wasn't recognizing, and he did not recognize and then seemed to nod in recognition, and I, in my conceit, as I said, took it as a recognition of being his spiritual son. But when I saw him there, and when I began to reflect in that moment upon the person who taught me how to think, who taught me what it meant to struggle against injustice, who taught me in the most profound sense of the word, as Leonard Cohen once put it, who taught me how to live, I don't know if I could ever be as presumptive to say that I was his spiritual son, but I can say in the most profound way possible that he, for me, was my spiritual father. Thank you.